I have no, I'm very convinced that we're going a lot higher. And anyone, you look at the relative position of gold in portfolios around the world, and it may be 1 or 2% allocation. That's very low. You'll get 10 or 20% in a really strong market, and then you'll see explosive price movements on the upside in the juniors.
Rob McEwen, McEwen Mining, how are you, my friend?
Excellent, Andy. Thank you. And yourself?
I'm doing fantastic. It's an honor. It's really, really great to meet you and love to pick your brains about a few specific things here as they relate to mining. So, gold has been ripping really since it's been, I want to say, since November of last year. What's going on in the gold market and the silver market?
Well, just to frame it, in the last 10 years, it's grown at an annual compound rate of greater than 11%. So it's been a good place to have your money. Since last year, we've seen a number of things happening. One, it's dawning on a lot more people that there's a massive amount of debt out there and a huge amount of liquidity, and the purchasing power of most currencies is disappearing, paper currencies. So that started it, as people started focusing on where should I put my money, because the purchasing power of the fiat currencies I'm holding has been declining quite rapidly. And then you had an election in the US, and a fellow down there who basically has thrown the chessboard up in the air, and all the pieces have fallen off and they have to be put back on. So he's introduced a lot of uncertainty. So geopolitical conflict, the change in people looking for new sources of supply of all sorts of commodities. And central bank buying has been quite strong, as they're rather going to gold rather than US treasuries. I think
So,
you're going to see a lot more of this too. It's going to go much higher.
this is really quite the trend that is just really going to continue, in your opinion.
Yeah. I mean, you had all the traditional factors to move gold. And I think Trump's election and the confusion he's thrown into the global economy has just been an accelerant to the traditional reasons.
Right. So, really, what's been interesting to me, and this has not been the case the last few months, I've done really well, but what's interesting to me is gold's been so strong. As you just mentioned, it's 11% compounded over, I think you said 10 years or 15
Yes,
years,
11 years, 10 years.
11 years. Yeah. But what's interesting to me is how the equities have lagged, except for the last, I mean, I'm up a lot the last 3 months. Well, why has that been the case? And do you see that as a new trend where the equities are going to start catching up to the underlying commodity asset?
I think there have been a couple of reasons. One, up until very recently, the seniors weren't doing very well. And they're the vanguard of the industry. And so people looking and saying, well, how come the Barricks, the Newmonts, and others aren't moving? And they were divesting of a lot of assets, trying to bring down their costs, improve their balance sheet. But if the majors aren't moving, there's little encouragement to go into the intermediates or juniors at the time. And you saw, I mean, numerous exploration stories where you'd be getting good drill results and it was like pushing a wet string. It just didn't go anywhere. And I kept asking myself, now what am I missing? Because right now these look really attractive and should be bought. And now you're just starting to see, with gold price going up, people are going, okay, the big guys are going to have a lot of money in their treasury. They're filling up quickly. They're going to need more resources and they want more production growth. So they're going to be reaching down into the intermediates and the juniors. And there'll be a cascading effect people buying stories that could be the next production or the next expansion of a resource pool.
Now, are we starting to see that right now? And then, yeah, if not, or if so, is that going to, I'm assuming that's going to continue is what you're saying. And then when are we going to see it? How long is that going to last, would you say?
Well, I think anyone investing in this space has to be aware that it's cyclical. And there are moments when it reverses itself. And when it does choose to reverse itself, it's very abrupt. But the long-term trend is up. I think there could be some corrections along the way. If the market's being flooded with new issues, certainly it's going to cool the investor appetite for a while, satisfy the appetite. I'm very convinced that we're going a lot higher. Anyone, you look at the relative position of gold in portfolios around the world, and maybe 1 or 2% allocation. That's very low. You'll get 10 or 20% in a really strong market, and then you'll see explosive price movements on the upside in the juniors.
I'm laughing because I agree with you. I agree with you, but I'm just laughing of like 10 to 20% when it's what, 0.5% or less than 0.5% right now. So, oh, happy day, I guess.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've gone through these cycles before. I've lived through a couple of these cycles, and it's surprising if you look at some of the manias, you'll get, triple zero increases in the majors. But you'll get, four-digit moves in the juniors and the junior developers and exploration stories.
Got it. So that leads me to when, as an investor, how do you evaluate? And you have a different perspective, and I mean this with the highest amount of respect. You're looking at it. Yeah, you're looking at it as an investor if you want to buy out a company. I'm looking at it as a junior if I want to give this junior money. My question is, how do you evaluate the company when there's so many of them out there? There's like 1,500 juniors out there. How do you evaluate a junior, an asset, as well as a company itself to buy?
Well, having built Goldcorp, I became very addicted to high grade. And so I'd say the first stories, the stories that walk into the room and say, I've got, when I hear someone say it's a high grade deposit and they have 5 grams, I just sort of look at them and go, what are you talking about? At Red Lake, we were 68 grams per ton. That's extreme grade. But so I'm looking, 10 plus grams. I'll look at the grade first. I'll then look at the insider ownership. And how much money do the principals have? How committed are they to this? If they're full of options and very little money has been put up, I become cautious. I look at where, how many ounces in the ground they might have, or what is the potential for that? What stage of development? Is it a early exploration play? Is it a PEA, a preliminary economic assessment, or a feasibility? I mean, you can look at that Lassonde curve and say, well, usually when someone talks about their feasibility study, then you have to worry about where they're going to raise the money, how they're going to raise it, what's going to be the price, what's going to be the impact. And also looking at their balance sheet. Do they have enough money to get to the next step where they're going to have to raise more money? Have they put debt on? I'm also very leery of companies that put royalties and streams on their properties. In our situation, I bought a property in Timmins that's our Fox project, but it had a stream on it when I bought it, and it was 8%. And we're basically selling it at $600 an ounce. I mean, I think the streams and the royalty companies have stolen the profit margins from the producers. and have really damaged the industry in terms of performance, because it's taken the profit margin and it's taken away the resilience on the downside. So those are the areas I look at. Then I look, you know, where are they? Are they in a camp, an old camp, or a new district? Have they found something, a different interpretation than previous? I mean, when I was running Gold Corp, I went into the Red Lake camp and everybody said, well, the mine you bought is at the end of its life. And I looked at it and said, well, there's a big high-grade mine next to it, and it used to have high grade, and they haven't spent any money on exploration. So I said, well, let's put $10 million into exploration. And a mile below surface, we hit this very high-grade vein that allowed us to become one of the lowest-cost gold producers in the world. And we went from 50,000 ounces to 500,000 ounces annual production, and our costs went from $360 an ounce to $60 an ounce. So there could... Yeah, it was great. It was a 60-fold change in the economics. So you're looking for some stories where maybe it's technology, it's a different interpretation of the geology. And is there a chance of it growing? And a lot are in established camps. And you look at Malartic, and it was in a camp, and everybody said, well, it's underground, it's low grade, and it's going to be massive scale, but it was technology, bigger trucks and bigger processing plants that allowed it to become the biggest gold mine in the country.
How much does jurisdiction matter to you, or are you agnostic when it comes to jurisdiction? Or, yeah, tell me about that.
I'd say I'm very much in the Americas. Africa has lots of gold, but I'm not really comfortable with Africa. Many years ago, when I was a portfolio manager, I'd buy lots of South African gold shares because they were high yielding, long life, relatively low cost. But then the geopolitics there changed, and it wasn't as an attractive destination. Canada's good. We have an operation in Mexico that's on care and maintenance right now, and I'm not sure if we're going to reactivate it. Just there's a criminal element there that's already taken $8 million from us a number of years ago. And there's, you know, personal risk to your employees. I've had an investment in Argentina for quite a long time, and they got a new president who's a libertarian, a trained economist, worked for a number of billionaires, and introduced new legislation to encourage large foreign investment. So had to be patient on that one. But
right.
So, but I mean, you look, some of the things that are going on right now with the geopolitical mixing, countries and manufacturers are scrambling right now to find new sources of supply. A year and a bit ago, I remember hearing Saudi Arabia talking about what they were doing. And I thought, well, that's really disruptive. They're licensing a lot of their mineral rights and encouraging large investments there. You no longer have to give up 51% of a Saudi company. You can now own 100%. They'll give you money back on your exploration. They'll give you cheap, low-cost capital to build your process plant. I was there earlier this year at their mining show, which rivals the size of the PDAC. You know, in 4 years, it's gone from 7,000 registrants to 27,000 registrants this year. But it was so refreshing to be in an environment where the government says, we want to make mining the third most important industry in the country, and we'll help you do that. So I found that somewhat disruptive, because they have a very positive approach to mining. They have lots of money. The government is going out of their way to help people get started. And there is quite a bit of history of mineral in that part of the world. You have that happening there. You have Argentina doing the same. I mean, in Argentina, as soon as the legislation was introduced that said we're going to cut the tax rate, open up the foreign exchange markets, give tax stability agreements in place, you had BHP cut a deal with Lundin Mining for $4.5 billion. Then you had Rio come in and pick Arcadian up for $6.7 billion, a lithium producer. And you have these majors looking and saying, well, why is it? And now you have Trump coming along and saying, let's clean up the permitting process. Let's run a lot faster. And countries are slowly dawning on them that they either have to be, these have to be assets they can develop within their realm, or they create partnerships with other companies where they do that. I mean, in August last year, the State Department signed an MOU with Argentina to develop critical minerals. And you're going to see other links like that. So jurisdiction can be quite important. There are other places where you have a political coup like Burkina Faso or something, and well, or Panama comes along and says, yeah, we're going to take this asset from you.
Right.
So, in Canada, we have problems with permitting. There's ambiguity dealing with the First Nations. The permitting tends to be slow, and maybe they'll change their ways quickly and understand that there's employment, capital investment, taxation to be gained if you get this going. So I'd say you got to watch your jurisdiction. I mean, you might be in a nice country and then someone declares war.
Let me ask this. I got two more questions for you. Is there, and you don't have to answer this, but I am curious, is there a jurisdiction that you wouldn't go to right now that you would mention?
I'm not a fan of Africa anywhere. It's just I've had a couple of experiences there that I thought, well, there's mineral belts all over the world. There's lots of places to invest today.
So what the risk?
Yeah, there's lots of opportunity in Canada, the United States, parts of South America. You go to Australia, it's different parts of Europe and Eurasia.
Got it. Talk to me, and we'll end on this question. Talk to me a little bit about copper. Copper's, correct me if I'm wrong, but we're at or near all-time highs here. We're really screaming. What's your outlook on copper and your involved in copper?
Well, I have big exposure to copper, so I have a bias. I'd like to go higher.
I'd still love to hear your thoughts.
All right. Well, we have a deposit in Argentina. I'll talk about it, and that's why I'm positive on copper. It's 37.6 billion pounds of copper. It's got a higher resource size at the moment than the published resources of what BHP paid $4.5 billion for, or valued at $4.5 billion. We're in the same province. We're at a lower altitude. We're closer to infrastructure. We'll have a feasibility out at the end of June. So when I look at a copper deposit, and since I grew up as a gold bug, I try to take these different metals and turn it into a gold equivalent. So at current rates, the gold price divided by the copper price, you come up with a ratio. What we have in our copper deposit is equivalent to a little bigger than a 50 million ounce gold deposit. And based on the PEA numbers, we'd be producing copper at $1 to $1 a pound, cash all in sustaining at $1.60, and we'd be producing for 27 years at at 600,000 gold equivalent ounces. In my book, that is one hell of a good gold deposit. So why is copper interesting? Asia is urbanizing, and copper is fundamental to urban growth. The AIs, copper mines aren't coming on quickly. There's lots of regulatory delays. There's capital issues. And you're seeing projected shortages based on the demand projections. So I think copper's been up to about 580. So we're still quite off that. We're 450.
Thanks for the correction. Yeah.
So I'm just looking at it, and it's integral to our modern world. I mean, the big data farms, the electrification, the energy transformation, all of those feed into copper. And you just, when you look at the projected demand and supply, the difference in there is quite large. And you've seen some of the majors wanting to come into that space in a bigger way because they see that energy transition. Mm-hmm. So it looks good. And that's, I thought, good. In our own project, I figure, well, we got a 75% gross margin. And, current prices, we'd be doing 400 million pounds of copper a year. That's about 1.7 billion in cash costs of about 500 million. So there's a nice spread in there.
It's a nice margin. Yeah. Well, I think we'll end on that. Rob, I want to just thank you. Thank you so much for your generosity with your time. I want to be selfish and have you as much as I can, but I'm just very grateful for coming on. I'm also grateful for what you've done with mining. I've been an investor and interested in mining since my early 20s, which is weird to a lot of people. I'm originally from the northwest in Alaska, and so that's so natural resource heavy, but that's where that came from. And then all the people I grew up, as well as yourself, I really grew up with reading about, studying, and trying to mirror my portfolio or life after it with not a whole lot of success. But I want to thank you for that. Thank you for what you've done with all of that. So
you're very welcome. I grew up in the investment industry. I followed my father into it and worked as a broker, as portfolio manager, researcher, sales. And along the way, I was very focused on the natural resource sector. And I met a number of people, promoters and the like, that came in with stories. And some of them, hit the ball right out of the park. And I thought, all right, that's sort of like the jet stream. And I left the investment community and said, well, let's see if we could do that too. And all these people came in, and it told me that there are many more discoveries still to be made. The world has all sorts of opportunity, and it can create a lot of wealth for a lot of people and create employment in communities. And I'd say the mining industry, people in it tend to be very generous in terms of giving back to society. And I've always found that a good source of capital to put back in for needs that one perceives in society. So, and the other is I've been in the Middle East twice in the last 6 months looking to secure some money for our copper project. And it struck me as I walked around, I saw very little litter. I didn't see very little graffiti. There was no homelessness. There wasn't much in the way of crime evident. And there were these beautiful buildings popping out of the ground, construction all over the place. And I thought, this is all based on natural resources.
And right.
Canada and the United States are huge land masses with untold amounts of natural resources. Why are we denying that lifestyle to our citizens? Why are our politicians trying to shut this down? And I think there's a tremendous opportunity to strengthen our currencies, improve the standard of living, get all sorts of technology going, and the secondary and tertiary industries that fall out of the mining industry, they provide all sorts of advances. So it's all about how do we improve the negative perception that the public has? How do we show them that today we're better stewards than we were 20, 50, 100 years ago? Because those are the legacy pictures in everybody's minds and say it's bad. And there are good examples of reclamation. Sudbury, which is a big nickel mining district in northern Ontario, Canada. NASA went up there when they were testing their lunar rover because they thought that looked closest to the moon. And today it's been all rehabilitated and beautiful green forests are growing there. And I think we just have to show more of that and teach our kids from kindergarten forward that, yes, you're going to hear about how bad mining was in the past, but today it's the practices have advanced considerably and that all of our modern world is built on what we've taken out of the ground. And we need to talk about both sides of the coin, and we don't.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up. And again, I'm conscious of your time, but I had that conversation with my own kids. And again, this is my love for really not only mining, but natural resources, right? And also listen, and that is a really, really bad rap in the last decade or so. We can take care of the planet. We can take care of communities and we can have a free market system and sound money all at the same time. And we can produce things and make things and be creative. And it all, like you said, it comes from mining. So again, thank you. Thank you for saying that. And thank you for doing your part. And I hope to do mine.
Yeah, well, I'll send you a 5-minute video that we have on our copper project. It's a very different model for mining. Low carbon emissions, low water consumption, all renewable energies, and architecture that puts a jewel on the side of the mountain rather than just a scar. So it's to alter the impression people have of mining.
I would really like to do that. If you send me the file, I'll put it on my YouTube channel and you'll get a bunch of views. And so hopefully that makes an impact.
Happy to do that, Andy. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. I do appreciate it.